Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Leon Russell's Paradise Studio on Grand Lake was a place where artists like Bob Dylan, George Harrison, and Eric Clapton all gathered at one time or another. It's a way to record music in relative seclusion along the beauty of Grand Lake and to work with a genius producer like Leon Russell. Now, nearly 40 years since the last tracks were cut in a session there, a group of Tulsa musicians returned to the studio to record a new album dedicated to great Oklahoma musicians like Russell, J.J. Cale, Lowell Fulson, The Gap Band, and many others. As contemporary musicians like Paul Benjamin, Jesse Acock, John Fulbright, Charlie Redd, Dustin Pitsley, Jacob Tovar, and many others present 17 songs from iconic Oklahoma songwriters in the new Horton Records release, Back to Paradise, a Tulsa tribute to Okie music. The new release drops this weekend with two events. Tomorrow night at the Marshall Brewing Company for the release of the Paradise Pilsner. That takes place at 6 o'clock. And then the following evening, there'll be a Back to Paradise album release show at the Canes beginning at 7 o'clock. Now, there's limited reserve seating, but the live stream will be free on Facebook Live on the Canes Ballroom site. My guest today is the president of the nonprofit Horton Records, devoted to recording contemporary Oklahoma musicians, and the executive producer of Back to Paradise, Brian Horton. Brian Horton, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about this idea of going back to Leon Russell's Paradise Studios up on Grand Lake and recording an album, sort of a tribute album to Oklahoma music. How did this idea of recording at the studios come about?
Well, like most things that happen that turn out pretty good, they weren't planned. In this case, we've had this idea for 10 or 12 years to make a record with some of the older Tulsa musicians and the younger Tulsa musicians, and we wanted to do it at the church studio for a long time, and things just weren't in a position, and we lost a lot of really wonderful people over the last 10 years, and out of the clear blue, this opportunity kind of came up. We work a lot with a producer and engineer in Little Rock, Arkansas, Fellowship Hall Sound. It's Jason Weinheimer. He had a fairly prominent national artist approach him wanting to do a record with all those Tulsa guys with the quote marks around it. And so we started, you know, nosing around, seeing where things were at with the church. And Jesse Acock is who, you know, had the idea. He said, well, hey, I know Rick Husky's, you know, shown some people the space out there at Grand Lake, Leon's old Paradise Studio, and Rick's been doing work on it a long time. Why don't we just see if that's available? So I got connected with Rick, and Jesse and Jason went out and did some recon work out there and kind of assessed the situation, and it looked really super cool. We kind of stepped back, put a plan together, and Jason was able to take gear up from Little Rock to the studio, and we started planning, you know, the entire process to take a whole group of people out there, and instead of having the older musicians with the younger, we decided to just honor the older musicians with some of the current musicians that are out there playing today, and really try to pay tribute to all those people from Oklahoma in the past that really made it possible for artists today to have a music scene. It's almost a privilege. You automatically, if somebody hears you're from Tulsa, it's like, oh, wow, Tulsa, music's great. And we wanted to pay tribute to that and respect that, and at the same time kind of showcase a lot of the great talent that we have today across the music scene.
How did the repertoire come together? You've got a lot of the big names of the Tulsa sound, Oklahoma, Red Dirt music, and some of the other, the Gap Band. You have the Gypsy Trips, which I have to admit I never heard of. But, of course, you know, people like Steve Ripley, J.J. Cale, Leon Russell, Dwight Twilley, Steve Pryor, Hoyt Axton, another great Oklahoma musician, Teagarden and Van Winkle. So how did you go about setting up the repertoire? Who was there a music director that sort of picked the tunes, or how did that work?
Well, I think everything, I believe, is a group effort, a team effort. But, you know, Jesse Acock and myself and Paul Benjamin, you know, especially Jesse and I, we are kind of these vinyl junkies that dig out all these rare records, and we're always searching for that holy grail. And, you know, oh my gosh, discovered some Oklahoma artists I never knew about. So we've kind of accumulated a pretty good library of stuff. And when we started thinking about putting the project together, we thought we should really honor, you know, a broad range of music as well as artists. So everything from the famous to the obscure. And really kind of you hit on it when you led into this question. It hits on like lots of different genres and subgenres. And I think it's representative of how varied really the music scene is here today, but yet how connected it is and how it's always been that way. So that's where we, you know, you have to do a Leon song when you go out and record at Paradise Studio. But what was super cool was John Fulbright on the way up there. Nobody knew what Leon song he would do. And he decided, hey, I'll do If the Shoe Fits. You know, mm-hmm. It kind of was recorded out here in that crazy time, and lyrically it was appropriate. But that's not a song that's, I would say, mainstream Leon. And then the Kale stuff, Paul Benjamin plays that stuff all the time in his set. And a lot of these guys do, and keep that music alive. And so, you know, Paul just on the fly pulled out a couple Kale songs. But the rest of it, you know, there are a few songs that the current musicians play, like Don White, Hell of a Deal. Paul's done that before. Dustin Pitsley has done Blind Man, which is really, it's got about five songwriters. We put Tom Skinner.
Tom Skinner.
Tom Skinner and Don Morris on there, but Mike McClure and I think Benny Craig. And so anyway, but we had to shorten it, you know, for different reasons. But anyway, so probably about half the record or so is material that was somewhat familiar that people play. And the other half was just really cool songs, like the Cliff Beasley song. That's a 7-inch single that I had found and listened to and loved and told Jacob Tovar. It's like, oh man, you got to do this song. It's so cool. We couldn't find any information about Cliff Beasley.
I didn't either. I was wanting to find out who Cliff Beasley was.
So this is kind of a cool story. So randomly, like right after we announced the record, John Woolley posted something on social media where he had played the B-side of that, or the other side, called Happy Hour at Home. And he mentioned that Cliff Beasley's daughter had reached out to him. So I immediately messaged Woolley, and I'd messaged John before asking if he knew anything about Cliff Beasley, and he really didn't have anything. So anyway, his daughter surfaced because she heard John play it on his radio program. And so I connected with John, connected with his daughter, and she was so appreciative that song got included. And that meant a lot to us, and it meant a lot to her, because her father had passed away in November of 2019. And she said, oh my gosh, if he would have known that, you know, he always believed that some young honky-tonk guy would take one of his songs and record it. And, you know, he just loved his music so much. And we're all just so thrilled that song got included on that. So that was a really sweet story around that.
Well, why don't we hear a little bit of Jacob Tovar doing I'm Gonna Get to Tulsa. This is that tune by Cliff Beasley. That's music by Jacob Tovar from I'm Gonna Get to Tulsa by Cliff Beasley from the Back to Paradise, a Tulsa Tribute to Okie Music recording, which is having its debut this weekend. And my guest is Brian Horton, the president of a nonprofit, Horton Records, and the executive producer of Back to Paradise. We mentioned that John Fulbright sort of was tasked to do a Leon Russell song. He chose really a great tune, If the Shoe Fits. Did all the musicians and all the artists kind of come up with their own songs, or was it a matter of them and you sort of negotiating, okay, what about this artist? What about this artist? Tell us about that process.
Yeah, we. So what happened is really me and Jesse Acock and Paul Benjamin kind of put a draft together of maybe 10 or 12 songs. We ended up with 17 songs on it, but 10 or 12. And we had some people in mind, you know, some songs that musicians already cover. And then there were other songs like, say, Tramp, which was Wolf Olson. This was an interesting process, too, because along the way, people were discovering, oh, my gosh, Tramp, I thought that was Otis Redding and Carla Thomas. Well, it was actually written by Wolf Olson, and people learned about that. And I just suggested Brand J. I just thought, you know, lyrically, that song and the energy and everything, she'd be a great fit, and she embraced it and really owned it. Same thing with Sarah Frick. We knew we wanted to do a Dwight Twilley song, and in that case, we just asked, you know, Sarah, hey, you know, we'd love for you to do a Twilley song. What do you think of that, and what song might you want to do? So she kind of provided the feedback, and in some cases, we gave people two or three options, like Teagarden and Van Winkle. We had some songs, and we knew that we wanted Matt Teagarden to play on the songs, and that's his dad.
Yeah.
And so we had talked about, you know, God Love and Rock and Roll, and we all really love Mona Sweet Mona, and that song ended up on the record, and Matt ended up, you know, later telling us that was really his favorite song, and that's the one he wanted to do. So, yeah, it was kind of a combination of both. We had a draft and then asked artists, different artists to come in and do songs. Same with the Gap Band song with Breonna Wright and Charlie Redd. They'd never heard the song. It's not on streaming platforms. It's the first track off Magician's Holiday on Shelter Records, and they heard it, loved it, and then we turned it over to Chris Combs and his little trio with Jake Lynn and Bo Halford, and Chris really arranged it, tied everything together, and that turned out fantastic in the studios.
And yeah, I Like It is just this great groove song, and what I found interesting was how faithful a lot of these versions were to the original recordings. I didn't know what to expect going in, whether it would be a reimagining, and some of the tracks are a reimagining of these songs, but a lot of them, like I'll Make Love to You Anytime, J.J. Cale by Paul Benjamin, the Gap Band tune, many of these, I mean, just really loving tributes.
Yeah, I think they did a good job of balancing that, where you definitely stay true to the song, but it's kind of got, all of these songs kind of have this groove or this boogie thing to them, you know, a lot of them. And that's kind of, I think, as much as anything, this signature Tulsa thing, whatever it is that ties a lot of things together. There's somehow, you know, that underpinning is some of that groove or whatever. And in some cases, like the, you know, the Gap Band song, they did take some liberties and turned it from a 2.5-3 minute song into a 6-minute song.
Yeah.
And had some fun with it. But yeah, you're right. In a lot of cases, it's them not reimagining it as much as here's what it sounds like when we take this song on and play.
Right. Well, let's talk about a tune where it is reimagined in a way, and it's really one of, I think, one of the standout tracks on the recording. That's John Fulbright's version of Hoyt Axton's Jealous Man. Now, if you've heard this, and probably most people heard it on an old WKRP television episode where Hoyt Axton was the guest, you know, that whole recording was just him and a guitar, and you really hear that sound that you're talking about in John Fulbright's version.
That is correct. Yeah, it's a great version, and a lot of people didn't know that that was Hoyt Axton whenever John would play that song live. That was one of those songs that we had some extra time, and it's like, all right, who's got another Oklahoma musician who knows the song? And it was actually Angelica, John's fiance, said, hey, you know, do that Hoyt Axton song. And I was like, wait a minute, Jealous Man's a Hoyt Axton song? I guess I missed that. And they went in and just basically cut it in one take, I think. So it turned out great.
Well, why don't we hear that? This is John Fulbright, Jealous Man, from the new album, Back to Paradise, a Tulsa tribute to Okie Music.
Hustler talking on a telephone, you better leave that woman alone. I'm a jealous man, and I die for love. Now, I don't know what you've been told, but that little lady ain't sure of the whole. Won't you understand that I'm a jealous man? Got the knife, well, I got the gun. Come on, boy, we're gonna have a little fun. I'm a crazy man, and I'd die for love. If you don't wanna rumble in the alley tonight, oh, it's too late for talking, and I'm ready to fight. Oh, leave it alone, I hang up the phone. Yeah.
It's music by John Fulbright, the Great Hoyt Axton's Jealous Man, part of the collection Back to Paradise, a Tulsa tribute to Okie Music, with my guest Brian Horton, who's the executive producer of Back to Paradise and the president of the nonprofit Horton Records. You have people like Paul Benjamin, John Fulbright, Dustin Pitsley, Jesse Acock, Jacob Tovar, Charlie Redd and Brianna Wright, Branjay, and a lot of others putting together really loving tributes of some great Oklahoma music. When you approach these artists, what was their feeling about going out to Grand Lake and going out to the Paradise Studios?
Well, needless to say, everybody was excited. And it was a project, you know, when we put it together and described it, it really seemed to resonate with everyone. And sometimes it's just the planets align and everything's right and these things happen easily. And I feel like that's what happened with this. And the space opening up, Rick Husky making that possible, he was very accommodating. Everybody got to stay out there in the cabin or in his lake house. And, you know, we had Kevin Sweat, a friend, came out and was cooking for people. So they had food on break. So it was a wonderful experience. Everybody was excited, but they really didn't know what to expect until they got out there, because I think 90% of the people had never seen the space or been out there. And everybody just kind of walks in the big studio and it's like, whoa, this is so cool. I think, you know, the vibe was still alive. Rick's done a great job of preserving what was there and not changing a bunch of stuff up and trying to maintain that aesthetic, and kept the big control room intact. And so everybody was really excited about it. And I don't think they probably fully appreciated how special the experience was going to be until they got out there. And I don't think any of us did. And it's one of those things when you get, you know, musicians, you know, there were 20 musicians that recorded on it, a couple of engineers and a couple people helping out. When you get people together that are kind of already friends and acquaintances and hang out, it is music with friends. And it's almost like this little weekend getaway, and you're all hanging out together and enjoying your time. And you create that environment where the musicians really are at their best and can be very creative and in the zone, if you will. And I think that environment was conducive to that. You know, I think that all the musicians would tell you that it was a really wonderful experience and they'll appreciate it.
In a lot of ways, they're recreating what Leon wanted for that space, really, because, you know, Leon built it out at the Grand Lake. You know, you had people like Clapton, Bob Dylan, and all, you know, flying into Tulsa, driving out to the lake, and basically sort of secluding themselves to create great music.
Yeah, I would totally agree. Whenever you go out there and, you know, just to drive, it's like, oh, I see what Leon was doing. He was trying to get away from the madness and kind of have his own little compound out there. You know, there's big gates and everything. And exactly what you said, it's like a community space, if you will, for the creative folks to go and hang out and do their thing. So it was really special.
Of course, the studios themselves are a story within themselves because, as you mentioned, they're big studios. I mean, he could have put a full orchestra out there and maybe did at one point or another. This is a guy who, you know, was just like your top of the list producer in Hollywood. He built this studio, you know, to accommodate anything that he wanted to do creatively.
Yeah, you could tell in the design that he had that in mind. Paul Benjamin's talked about that in a couple interviews. It's like, oh, you know, he said it's like a big air traffic control room. One side of the room is way over here. The other side is on the other, you know, opposite end. And then you got everything in the middle. And you can almost set up people recording on one side while somebody else is getting dialed in and ready on the other side. And it's just super efficient to just cut back from one kind of recording station to the other, or have everybody out there together in one big room where you can really multi-track live and do your thing together live and kind of capture that energy. Sometimes it's lost if it's processed too much. So definitely Leon knew what he was doing.
Now, the space itself hasn't been a recording studio in some time. I assume it's just been preserved by Rick Husky, right?
Yeah. Rick said that, I think it was John LeMay was the engineer out there, and he said it was the, you know, last thing anything really got recorded, I think, was in 1978. I think the Hanson brothers maybe went out there and dabbled somewhere along the way. But when Rick got it, he told us, like, the roof was, you know, a big hole in the roof, and they were storing, like, farm implements or lawn equipment and stuff in it. So And he's had it for about 30 years, I think. So this has kind of been a long process for Rick. And this he was so sweet. I mean, this project really hit in his wheelhouse, and he's been wanting to do something. And this was kind of a great first project to kind of jumpstart that studio. And he's already had two other sessions record out there since we did this in February. So I'm real excited for him and so glad that he took the time and, you know, effort and had the passion to preserve it in the way that he did.
Now, sometimes the idea that a space can be special and really sound sweet can be overhyped. But what was your reaction to hearing these musicians you know so well playing in this space?
Some of the musicians call me Daddy Ho Ho. It's like I kind of feel like this proud father or whatever, because I'm older than these guys, but I've kind of been there along the way the last 10 or 12, 15 years. And it's just great to see them light up and do their thing and capture it and really make some great music. It's something that I've experienced with them, like I mentioned, Fellowship Hall and Little Rock and some other studios. It's everybody has to find the right space for them to create. And this just works for the majority of, you know, that space worked for the musicians at that time out there. And that's real important, I think, in the process, is finding a producer, an engineer, and a studio space that's conducive to what you want to do and also what you can afford. I mean, unfortunately, that's the brutal reality, is it's not cheap and it costs money, and I wish everybody had more of an opportunity to go do, you know, a project like this and record in spaces like that. So that's our long-term goal, is, you know, as Horton Records and as a nonprofit, how can we continue to, you know, get grant money and funding and give more and more opportunities to artists to experience, you know, things like what happened out at Paradise Studio.
Well, you have this great cadre of musicians that have such a great rapport with them, and they sound so wonderful. Doesn't matter, you know, which one of them are in front. They have this great sound that just seems to come through on every single cut.
Well, I think that, I mean, there's a lot of what you don't see out front, or, you know, you see somebody's name on a record, but there are a lot of the musicians here that are so humble, and it's the, you know, it's the rhythm sections. It's Patty Ryan and Aaron Baylor. It's Jake Lynn and Bo Halford. It's Corey Mauser on keys, Matt Teagarden, all of these different people. Brandon Holder, you know, Brandon played in Leon's band for 10 years and came out and did a Dustin Tisley song. But that's the engine. That's the engine room. And the great thing with the musicians here, and it happens in other cities too, but whenever it happens and the connections there, they're listening to each other. They're playing off one another, and they have that connection, and they're just in tune with that. And I believe that happens a lot from playing live. Tulsa is very much a live music city. People love going out to the bars and clubs and venues and seeing live music. And the musicians are out there playing together live a lot. They're not just sitting in the rooms practicing or recording in a studio. And whenever I think that you have that experience live, you kind of hone your skills. And if you're not a good listener, if you're going out there and you're just, you know, hammering out whatever you want to play and not playing within the context of the song and, you know, playing off the other musicians, it's hard to, you know, sustain that for very long. And I think musicians around here really listen to each other and collaborate well in that regard.
And of course, our musicians now with COVID-19, I mean, that is, you mentioned that live performance is sort of the backbone, and that's been seriously curtailed. And you're releasing this record at this particular time. I know you have two events this weekend. Tell us a little bit about these events and how people can be a part of it.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. It is a tough time. And I would say that, you know, live music isn't just the musicians either. It's all the gig workers. And a lot of the work that Horton Records does connects other parts of the music ecosystem and gives them a place to hook on and have work and opportunity as well. So like Friday, August 28th, that's the date that the album is released. We have a beer release in conjunction with Marshall Brewing Company. It's called Back to Paradise Pilsner. And we've worked a lot with Marshall and Eric and his whole team over the years. They've always supported Tulsa Music and Horton Records and everything that's going on. And it was really fun to collaborate with them on a beer release. So we're going to go to their tap room, and we're going to set up outside. So it's going to be outside, socially distanced, lots of room. And we're going to play the record, and you can sample the beer or buy some six packs of 12-ounce cans and take them with you and check it out. We'll have some free stuff to give away. We'll sell the record. And then me and Phil Clarkin and Jesse Acock are going to also spin some vinyl, some original versions of the songs that were covered and songs from other Oklahoma artists. So it'll be a lot of fun and a kind of a neat way to kind of celebrate the release. And then Saturday, August 29th at the Canes Ballroom, we're going to do a limited seating live show and a live stream in conjunction with Live from Canes and Oklahoma Arts Council, Church Studio, White Claw, and really happy to do that there. Once again, by doing that show, we're able to help get the Canes staff paid. We're going to be able to help get the production crew from Live from Canes paid. We're going to also be able to help the musicians get paid. Pilgrim's going to open that show, great local band. We hope to have Casey Van Beek and the Tulsa Groove open it. And unfortunately, they weren't able to make that happen. But we're hoping when, you know, maybe things get better, we'd love to do a collaborative kind of show with Casey and his band. That would be a lot of fun. So you can get tickets at canesballroom.com. I think there's only a couple tables left. You have to buy a table of four. All the tables are spread out. Masks right. are required. So should be very safe.
But you can watch it on Facebook.
Yes, the live stream will be on all of the, it'll be on the Canes Ballroom Facebook page, Live from Canes page, Horton Records page. So lots of different outlets online to watch it. And it's free, which is the tip jar for the band.
There you go. My guest today is Brian Horton, the president of nonprofit Horton Records and executive producer of the new recording Back to Paradise, a Tulsa tribute to Okey Music, which features, Paul Benjamin, John Fulbright, Branjay, Jesse Acock, Charlie Redd, Dustin Pitsley, and I'm leaving a few folks out, and I'm sorry about that, but it's really featuring the Tulsa sound and the Oklahoma sound. And let's leave folks with another number. Was there any piece on this recording where it was like, wow, this came out completely different than I thought it was going to come out?
Well, I think there were a few of those moments, I would say that one of the songs that was really epic and really cool was Rock and Roll Gypsies that Jesse Acock did. And that is a song that is Gypsy Trips. You mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
Well, Gypsy Trips was Roger Tillison and Terry, his girlfriend. And they put that song out originally. And they went on and did like that leather. I think Terry was with J.J. Cale and Leather Coated Minds when they were doing the.
Yeah, but that recording sounds like something out of the folk revival in the 60s.
Yes. Yeah, it was kind of that mid-time period. But then later, you know, Jesse Ed Davis recorded it on his album in 1970, his debut self-titled album. So that song was really cool because it was touched on by multiple Oklahoma artists. And I think Jesse Acock did a great job on it. And it just built to this huge chorus at the end with Sarah Frick singing and other people. And I think it's just a beautiful song. And that I think everybody was really proud of how that one came out in the studio.
Well, Brian, thanks very much for joining us. We'll leave folks with that recording. The name of the new CD is called Back to Paradise, a Tulsa tribute to Okey Music from Horton Records. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Horton is the president of the nonprofit Horton Records and the executive producer of the new recording, Back to Paradise. It releases this weekend with two events, one Friday at 6 at the Marshall Brewing Company and Saturday at 7 at the Canes Ballroom. Now that event is almost sold out, but you can watch the free live stream on the Canes Ballroom Facebook page. That begins at 7 o'clock Saturday night. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher.